Narayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 24, Chapter entitled The Renunciation of Kardama Muni, Text Number 30. Swiyam vakyam ritam katum.
Swiyam vakyam ritam.
Avatirano si me grihe. Chikir shur bhagavan gyanam. Bhaktanam manavartana. Swiyam vakyam ritam katum. Avatirno si me grihe.
Avatirno si me grihe.
Chikir shur bhagavan gyanam.
Chikir shur bhagavan gyanam.
Bhaktanam manavartana.
Bhaktanam manavartana.
Swiyam.
Swiyam.
Your own.
Your own.
Vakyam.
Vakyam.
Words.
Words.
Ritam, true.
Katum,
to make.
Avatirna,
descended.
Asi,
you are. Me,
grihe,
in my house.
In my house.
Chikirshu,
Chikirshu,
desiring of disseminating.
Bhagavan,
the personality of Godhead.
Gyanam,
knowledge.
Knowledge.
Bhaktanam,
of the devotees.
Mana,
the honor.
Vartana,
who increases.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Kardama Muni said, You, my dear Lord, who are always increasing the honor of your devotees, have descended in my house just to fulfill your word and disseminate the process of real knowledge. Translation responsibly. Kardama Muni said,
You, my dear Lord,
who are always increasing the honor of your devotees.
You are always increasing the honor of your devotees.
Have descended in my home.
Have descended in my home.
Just to fulfill your word.
Just to fulfill your word.
And disseminate the process of real knowledge.
And disseminate the process of real knowledge.
Purport. When the Lord appeared before Kardama Muni after his mature yoga practice, he promised that he would become Kardama's son. He descended as the son of Kardama Muni in order to fulfill that promise. Another purpose of his appearance is Chikirshur Bhagavan Gyanam, to distribute knowledge. Therefore, he is called Bhaktanam Mana Vartana, he who increases the honor of his devotees. By distributing Sankhya, he would increase the honor of the devotees. Therefore, Sankhya philosophy is not dry mental speculation. Sankhya philosophy means devotional service. How could the honor of the devotees be increased unless Sankhya were meant for devotional service? Devotees are not interested in speculative knowledge. Therefore, the Sankhya enunciated by Kapila Muni is meant to establish one firmly in devotional service. Real knowledge and real liberation is to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage in devotional service. Om Gyan Timadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kaupa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Rama Hare Rama Hare Hare. So this is the renunciation of Kardama Muni. So interesting part of the Bhagavatam, because Kardama has received the best son in the universe. There was nothing better than receiving Krishna himself, or his empowered representative, as your son. So he has the topmost person who has taken birth of his son. Whenever someone has a child, a devotee, they try to get the best child. They prepare their consciousness, and they try to get someone similar to the Lord and to the Lord's devotees. The devotees, it is actually mentioned in Ayurveda, that when you conceive a child, the wife and the husband, they can look at a picture of Krishna or Ramachandra while they're conceiving, in order to fix their consciousness upon the Lord. With the consciousness that you want to attract a child who has the qualities of the Lord, who is the Purushottama, or the greatest of all people. So, Kardama, he has conceived with Devahuti, and then he's received Kapila, who is said to be Shaktyavesh, said to be an empowered representative. You know. A jiva who has the power of God himself. That is an exalted personality, very special personality. But the chapter is called The Renunciation of Kardama. So it's contradictory. Prabhupada explains this throughout the purports. You get the best child and then you leave home. So normally that does not make sense. You know, if you have a bad child, then you leave home. Or if the wife is not cooperative, you may leave home. Or if the husband is not qualified, you may leave home. But you don't leave home generally. Or it is not done. None of us would do it. If you get a child like this, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So if you get someone like that, you're not going to renounce, but Kardama leaves. So then Prabhupada explains, what's the logic? Why would Kardama leave? Why would he walk out of the home straight after having such a qualified child? So he leaves the home because he's showing an example to us. So the Bhagavatam, the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, all these great scriptures, which some of them are Itihasa, Purana, these historical scriptures, Jiva Goswami says in the Sandarbhas that the Puranas are more important than the Shruti. In other words, the Smriti is more important than the Shruti. The Vedic literatures are divided into two categories, Smriti and Shruti. Shruti means the philosophical portions, which are said to emanate from the Lord himself. So something like the Upanishads. Look like the Ishopanishad. There's no storyline in there. It is not Puranic. Purana, the word means old, ancient. Purana. So this is a Purana. It's an ancient, but it's part of the Smriti section of the Vedas. So one section of the Vedas is just philosophical, like the Bhagavad Gita. It's called Gita-Upanishad. So there's no storyline in there. It's just philosophy straight. And then there is the other part of the Vedas, which is called Smriti. Smriti means remembered or remembrance. It is the part of the Vedas where the sages who represent Krishna they're relating the history of the universe and the word slipped out of my mind, the events which took place in the universe previously. So they remember what's taking place previously, and then they relate that to you. And within the story, the Smriti, the Purana, then you will find the philosophy, the Vedanta. Vedanta means the end of all knowledge will be found. So you get the storyline, but you get it in such a way that you can remember it. It's much easier to palate. Just like if you give class, quite often one of the best ways to give class is to tell a story. Repeat, okay, here's the story, and you tell it, and then everyone stays awake. That's why Jiva Goswami says the Puranas or the Smriti is more important than the Shruti section of the Vedas, especially in Kali Yuga, because everyone falls asleep in class. There's actually a pastime, it's a Vedic pastime, where Nidra Devi, Nidra means the goddess of sleep, so she comes to the Lord. She says, I can't affect your devotees because they're so absorbed in your service, they will not sleep. I cannot overcome them. So please give me shelter. I need to be able to enter somewhere. So then the Lord says, okay, whenever class is on, Bhagavatam class, at that time you can come. So you see half the time when you give class, you know, the devotee, you say, Om Namo Bhagavate, and everyone goes, so we should not sleep in class, even though the Nidra Deva's potency is there at that time. You can feel when the class is on, you can feel, and you have to actually, it's the responsibility of the speaker, it's a responsibility of the listener. He has to stay awake, they have to stay awake. It's your responsibility not to sleep in class. It's actually an insult to the person who's giving the class. It's disrespectful. And it says in Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami says, if you sleep in front of the deities, that's an aparad. It's one of the 64 aparads. So if you're in Bhagavatam class in front of the deities, in front of Prabhupada, then you're committing an aparad by sleeping. So if you can't stay awake, then just go and take rest. Yeah. Even in Prabhupada's time, you know, sometimes devotees, they would fall asleep. In Prabhupada's time, devotees generally slept less than what they do now. So they would fall asleep. Even one time a devotee was sitting there and his forehead hit the ground. You know, Prabhupada was giving class and he just kind of fell asleep like that. And everyone looked and Prabhupada said, go and take rest. If you're so tired, go and take rest. Don't sleep in the class, that's the point. So that's why we have the Smriti. And Jiva Goswami says the Smriti is more important, especially in Kali Yuga, because it's much easier to digest the philosophy when there's stories. So these stories are there to set an example. And this particular story, Kardama leaves. Why would he want to leave Kapila? Kapila's the Lord. He's got the association of the best person. You could not get a better son. So why would he leave? Right? It's simply, Prabhupada says, because he's setting an example to us. Generally, that's what you should do. Generally, you should renounce grihastha life. That's the principle which is being taught within the Bhagavatam. Not that you should leave the Lord. That's not the principle. The principle is you should give up the material energy. So it's an example. There is no material energy because Kardama has Kapila as his son. Right, he himself is a pure devotee, so there's nothing material about the situation, but as an example. So the Bhagavatam is full of those kind of examples. The Mahabharat is full of those kind of examples. The Ramayana is full of those kind of examples. Why? To show us what we should do. Not that we can do that, but we should understand what the standard is. So you look in the Mahabharata. So a famous example is Gandhari. So Gandhari finds out who she's marrying. She's a young girl, a princess, right? And then the father comes and says, okay, we've found the husband. Okay, and who do they say? Dhritarashtra, right? They say, you're marrying the emperor. Right? It's not a small marriage. You're marrying the king of the earth, Dhritarashtra. However, he cannot see. right? He is blind, right? So then what does she do, right? As soon as she hears that, she picks up a piece of cloth, wraps it around her head, ties her eyes, never looks again, right? Now, will any of us or could any of us do that? No. I could not do that. I've meditated on it. I couldn't do it. Give up my vision for anyone on this planet. Okay, maybe not anyone. You know, maybe Prabhupada, maybe my guru, maybe. You know, if they asked me, then maybe I could surrender to it. But I doubt I could surrender to it. For anyone else, I could not do it. But she does that. This is showing us the quality of the person. It showed us the Vedic example of what we should aspire to be. So what's the principle? You can't follow the example because that's too high. But what's the principle? The principle is, psychologically, the wife needs to make the husband feel superior. Psychologically. Even though she may be superior. Even though she may be more qualified. You know, half the time the wife is more intelligent than the husband. Half the time. You know, I look at my wife, in many ways she's more qualified than me. In many ways. Right? But the psychology of the man is he has to feel superior. That's male ego. Right? That's the male physiology and psychology. He has to feel superior. So if she's intelligent, then she will make him feel superior. Okay, she may be more intelligent, more superior. She may be superior, but she makes him feel superior. Right? So that's the basic lesson which we take. So the basic lesson here that we get from Kardama is that we should renounce the material energy. So as the Varnashram system unfolds or evolves in our life, we should feel renunciation taking place in our consciousness. That's the point. Because most devotees will go through Grihastha Ashram. Most. Right? So as they go through Grihastha Ashram, the spirit of a devotee in Grihastha Ashram is to become more renounced as time goes by. More detached from the material energy. That is the point. And you see here the Kardama, he is so detached, he shows the example that I will leave. Because traditionally that is what you should do. Prabhupada says numerous times in his books, at the age of 50, you should renounce Grihastha life. He says that. That's the basic principle. Okay, so then in Kali Yuga, we don't see that's happening. Right? I was, you know, 45, which is almost 50, and I got married again. Right? So that's not what really is being taught here in the Bhagavatam. Right? I know friends of mine, close friends, close devotee friends, are almost 50 or over 50 or having kids. So that's not what the Bhagavatam is talking about. So Kali Yuga is a totally different thing. Because in Kali Yuga, everything is already turbulent. And we're just trying to practice spiritual life within that turbulence. Get back to Krishna. That's the most important principle of the Bhagavatam. That regardless of what's taking place externally or in the material energy, you just stay focused on Krishna. Radhanath Swami says, devotional service is like rowing down a river. So you're rowing down the river. You're in your little canoe. Has anyone, you've been canoeing before? Right? So you're going in your canoe, and then you hit the rapids. Right? And if you're going through, and then suddenly, you know, you hit a rock, and then the whole thing, and then you go around, and then it gets turbulent, and the boat's going like this. This is life. That's what it's like in the material. That's what devotional service is like, trying to go back to Krishna. That means sometimes it's moving like this. Material energy is pushing you, according to the modes of material nature you're in. But you stay fixed on not falling out of the boat, and getting to your destination. So as devotees, that's our mission. Our mission is to get back to Krishna at any cost. So sometimes things don't work out ideally in our life. Hands up if your life has been ideal so far. Okay. Hands up if it feels like you're in the rapids. It's funny when you get a 19-year-old devotee putting his hand up, I'm in the rapids. So this is... this is the material energy. It is pushing us all over the place. That's how the material energy. But what the Bhagavatam is teaching us, regardless of what takes place, you just stay fixed on Krishna. So Kardama, he's teaching us we should be feeling renunciation. So that's how each devotee should be feeling as time goes by. We should be feeling a sense of renunciation. The Bhagavatam says this from the very beginning. What's the second chapter of the first canto called? No, first canto, second chapter. What's the first chapter called? Questions by the Sages, yeah. And what's chapter 2 called? Divinity and Divine Service. Right? So Prabhupada said that chapter is so important, chapter 2, that we should memorize the whole chapter. Right? It's such a significant chapter. And actually the entire process of bhakti, because Rupa Goswami, Prabhupada says that the nectar of devotion, or the bhakti rasamrita sindhu, is the law book for ISKCON. Prabhupada said that. It's the law book, the nectar of devotion. It is the entire process of devotional service. Right? Abhideya. Abhideya means the process of how to get back to Krishna. The acharya, or the guru of Abhideya philosophy, Abhideya Tattva, is Rupa Goswami. Right? Sanatana Goswami is the guru of Sambandha. Raghunath Das Goswami teaches Prayojana. But the Abhideya, or the process of how to get back to Krishna, is Rupa Goswami. So the nectar of devotion, he's extracted the essence of all the Vedas and given us the Abhideya, or the process of how to reach Krishna. Now he gives a verse which describes the 9 levels which we generally must pass through in order to reach Krishna. Going from Shraddha to Prema. Right? So there are 9 levels. Now where does he get that from? That comes from the second chapter of the first canto, Divinity and Divine Service. From verses 12 to 20, then the Bhagavatam itself teaches us, going from Shraddha to Sattva Sangha to Bhajana Kriya to Anatta Nivritti, Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, Prema. In those must be 9 verses. Then the entire process is given. So Rupa Goswami, he has extracted that. That is our process, how to get back to Krishna. So within that second chapter, it is such an important chapter. Prabhupada says you should memorize the whole chapter. Our whole philosophy is in that chapter. So there's one very important verse, Vasudevi Bhagavati, and Bhakti Yoga Priyojita. Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Cheyat Ohoitukam. What does Ohoituki mean? Causeless. Automatic, it means. Causeless. Ohoituki. So devotional service, when you perform it properly, and this is, it's an interesting point. Devotional service is scientific. Prabhupada calls the nectar of devotion the nectar of devotion, and what is the subtitle? Right? The nectar of devotion, and then there's a subtitle. What does he say? Right? It says the science of bhakti yoga. Right? It is a science. Right? It's not just haphazard. It's not just, just come to the temple and do whatever you want. There is a science. There is a specific way in which the methodology must be practiced. You can't just do whatever you want in devotional service and expect to get the result. It doesn't work anywhere else in life. How is it going to work in spiritual life on the path of devotional service? You can't just go in the kitchen, grab any ingredient you want, throw it in a pot, put it in the oven, put the oven on any temperature, and then expect to get apple crumble. That's not going to work. Right? There is a science. Apple crumble is a recipe. It's a science. Right? They made apple crumble here one time when Prabhupada was here. Apple crumble is not Vedic. Right? And there was debate amongst the devotees. Can we use oats? Because oats are for horses. Right? Can we use oats and offer them to the deities? And some devotees are saying, you cannot offer to Krishna. Some were saying. So they made apple crumble. They took it upstairs to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada had it. He took it. And he said, bring me more. He said, bring me more crispy apples. Apple crumble. So Prabhupada gave his blessing. It is bona fide. So apple crumble is there, but there is a recipe. Right? It's a science. You have to learn. You have to go to Yadu Shrestha Prabhu, right, who knows how to make it. He makes good apple crumble. He used to make it all the time. So you go to him and say, Prabhu, what is the science? What is the method? How do you do it? So he says, okay, you turn it on this much. You put this much butter. You mix it this much. You make it crispy on the top. A lot of the times devotees cook it, it doesn't turn out crispy. It's still raw. You have to get the right temperature so you don't burn it, but so it crisps. It's a science. You need a guru. You need guidance. You need the methodology. And then you will understand it. So devotional service is exactly like that. You can't just do whatever you want and think you're going to go back to Godhead. It doesn't work. Rupa Goswami says there are 64 ways in which you can serve Krishna. Viti and Nisheda. Vidhi means those things I should do, and nisheda means those things I must avoid. Right? Devotional service is all about those things. And what is it all governed by? It is governed by one principle. What is the principle which governs everything we do? Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. All the vidhi is so I can remember Krishna. All the nisheda is so I will not forget Krishna. So all these rules are given. You have to do this and you should not do that. When we take initiation in ISKCON, we vow, I will do one thing. Every day I will chant 16 rounds. That is vidhi. That will take you to Krishna. Right? And then we vow nisheda, four things we will not do. Because if you do those things, you will forget Krishna. So that is what the scriptures are full of. These elements, the positives, the negatives, the positive injunctions, the negative injunctions. So, Rupa Goswami, he gives you 64 ways that you can serve Krishna. But then when you get to number, I think it's around 19, or maybe it's 11, maybe it's the second section. But there's one where he gets to. And then he says, do not commit offences towards the deity. And then, chapter 8 of the Nectar of Devotion, then he goes into an entire elaboration, offences to be avoided. Right? Sit now, 64 things you should not do. Or 64 things you have to be very careful to avoid if you want to attain perfection in devotional service. So it is scientific. You can't just do whatever you want to do. Just like we said before, you can't sleep in the temple room. It's up around. It's mentioned. It's offensive. Just like if I invite you to my house, I say, you know, come over, we'll have prasadam, and then we're sitting there in prasadam, and I start falling asleep. And then you'll say, well, you know, how does it make you feel? From my side, it means inattentive. So devotional service is like that. It cannot be done inattentively. If you want to attain the goal, or you want to attain the destination, it must be done properly. So Prabhupada always said, when he told us to chant rounds, he said 16 rounds attentively. Because anyone can chant 16 rounds. Well, it's not that anyone can, because most people in Kali Yuga can't do it. But those who do chant 16 rounds, it has to be done in a very specific way. And you see in the morning when we're chanting, and Prabhupada's, do they still put Prabhupada's tape on? We used to put Prabhupada's tape on. So it's like every 7 minutes, Prabhupada chants one round. If you listen to his japa tape, so it goes every 7 minutes, like that. And then halfway through, every 7 minutes, Prabhupada says, sit properly. So remember, I used to sit here, you know, chanting when I used to live in Melbourne, you know, chanting with the devotees in the morning. Every 7 minutes, sit properly. Right? And that's ecstatic. That's there for a reason. Krishna put that there for a reason. Because Prabhupada is saying, you have to do it properly if you want to get the result. You can chant your rounds, but if you want to get the result, there has to be attention. There has to be, and ultimately, if you go into the higher levels of Shikshastika, if you study the Bhajana Rahasya of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and you study Harinam Chintamani, and then you study Shikshastika, which is what it is all based upon. When you get to the higher levels of Shikshastika, then it says tears will come in the eyes. That's actually the goal. When you're chanting the holy name, there should be emotion. You'll never get to the platform of emotion unless you do attentive chanting in the beginning. So it is systematic, it is scientific. So we don't just get it automatically. So as devotees practice devotional service over time, they should feel a natural sense of renunciation manifesting within their consciousness. That means you're doing devotional service properly. If you're becoming more detached from the material energy, that means you're applying yourself properly to the devotional platform or the devotional methodology or the devotional practices. Because it says, ahoituki. Janayat yashu, vairagyam, renunciation. Gyanam chayat ahoitukam. Automatically, you should be feeling renounced. You should be feeling detached. You should feel like your material desires are lessening, not increasing. When we perform devotional service, sometimes we feel like our devotional services are going up and sometimes they're going down. Do you ever feel like that? Sometimes you feel like your material desires are increasing, right? So it's like a fluctuation. It goes up and down. That is called anishtita bhakti. That means we have not gone to the platform of nishta at this point in time. It's we're not steady in devotional service. When you become steady, then you do not become wavering in devotional service all the time. It doesn't go up and down, up and down. You just become fixed in devotional service. But in the beginning, the platform which we practice, we sometimes feel like enthusiasm comes and it goes. Or we feel like the material desires, they come and they go. So we all experience that, I think. So Jiva Goswami says that if you are practicing devotional service for a long period of time, so you've been practicing for years and years, and he says that you feel like you don't have a taste for chanting the holy name. Can anyone relate to that? I've been doing this for years and years. I don't feel like anyone, does this sound accurate? We feel like that sometimes. So sometimes we feel we don't have a taste. Even though I've been doing it for so long, when will it come? So Jiva Goswami says, if you feel like you've been doing it for a long time and you're not getting a taste, he said, then increase your chanting and increase your hearing. Do more of it. Every year I like to go to these retreats in Govardhan and Varshana with Burajan Prabhu and Sachinandan Swami. And Sachinandan Swami gave us an instruction one year. And he said that just like in marriage, sometimes the husband and wife aren't getting along so well. So they go to a marriage counselor. Marriage counselor like the guru. So you go to the marriage counselor, and the marriage counselor says, what is the problem? And he said, well, we're not getting along so well. So then the marriage counselor said, okay, I just want the two of you to go off on a holiday just together and just spend time together and then work on your relationship and reestablish your relationship. They go off, they spend time, you know, and then by putting some energy back into it, the relationship flourishes again. Or it ends in divorce, one of the two. But for the purpose of the analogy, we say everything ends up happily ever after. Okay. So, then Maharaj said that sometimes you feel like Nam Prabhu, the holy name. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says Nam Prabhu, the holy name, who we have a relationship with. But we've neglected the relationship over time. So we have a relationship. Every day we sit down and chant, but we're not chanting properly. And we neglected the relationship with the holy name. And then we feel like after some time the holy name has become distant from us. And we don't feel close to the holy name. We're not getting a taste in the association. So therefore, then Maharaj was saying, then that means you have to go off and spend some time just chanting. Right? Decrease the other activities, your other social responsibilities. And go off and just absorb yourself in association with the holy name. And then the relationship flourishes again. And the taste comes back. Yeah. And specifically, it's interesting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says in the Harinam Chintamani, he gives a breakdown of the 10 offenses in chanting. Yeah. So, one of the offenses is to be inattentive while chanting. Does anyone suffer from that? Sometimes inattentive while chanting. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually says, of the 10 offences, which one causes all the others? It's that one. It's inattention while chanting. Right? That offence, because when we in ISKCON, in the morning, when we say 10 offences, we say, and it is also an offence to be inattentive whilst chanting. But if you look in the Harinam Chintamani, because that list is from the Puranas, but if you look in the Harinam Chintamani, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he merges 5 and 6, which are very similar. Those two offences are very similar. So he merges them. And he puts inattention as one of the actual offences. So then, he says that this is the cause of all of the other offences. Why do you commit offences whilst chanting? Because you're ultimately being inattentive. You're not chanting properly. So then he says, what is the remedy? He gives different remedies, but it's interesting because he says one of them, one of the remedies in order to cure our inattentive chanting is to observe the holy days like Ekadashi and Janmashtami. And Janmashtami is coming up soon, isn't it? Right? This Thursday, huh? Mangalarti will be packed. It's one day of the year where everyone actually comes. So Janmashtami is there. And what is the purpose of Janmashtami? The purpose of Janmashtami is to exclusively, for one day, exclusively absorb yourself in the service of Krishna. One day. If we can't do it any other day of the year, just one day. Give yourself as much as you can, 100%, to Krishna. Just like when we do a jagya, right? At the end of the jagya, when we say swaha, and we offer the oblation to the fire, then quite often in Sanskrit, the Purohit, the priest, he will say, idam Krishna idam na mama. This is for Krishna, it is not for me. So that is our mantra on Janmashtami. Idam Krishna idam na mama. This is all for Krishna, it is not for me. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that if you're lacking taste, he said on the day like Janmashtami, and I've experienced this myself, sometimes I'm struggling in devotional service, which we all do, and then Janmashtami comes and I just throw myself in as much as I can, and then at the other, when I come out of Janmashtami, I feel invigorated again, enthused again in devotional service. Just one day you absorb yourself in hearing and chanting about Krishna. Just like a couple of years ago, there was a new devotee who, I can't remember, he was living in the ashram or he was getting close to living in the ashram. And he came to me and he said, what should I do? It's Janmashtami. It's my first Janmashtami. I don't know what to do. And he said, I don't have any service. And I said, then your only service is just to stay in the temple and just chant all day. Unless someone asks you, please come and cut the vegetables, or please come and do another service. Then you just stay. And interesting, if you go back to 1966, 67, 68, when ISKCON was not bigger than 26 Second Avenue and 6 Frederick Street in San Francisco, that was basically ISKCON. It was a couple of shops, fronts. And when Janmashtami came, and devotees said to Prabhupada, what do we do? Prabhupada said, you just stay in the temple all day and hear and chant. And in 1970, they were flying across to Japan, flying across to India, and they stopped in Japan. And they observed, there's only a few devotees with Prabhupada, Tamal Krishnamaraj and a few devotees. And they're in Japan for Janmashtami and Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja. And it was in the evening, like 6 o'clock in the evening. And we're supposed to stay up until midnight on Janmashtami when Krishna appears. And they were just sitting in the little room, which was the temple room. And Tamal Krishnamaraj said to Prabhupada, he said, what do we do like that? And Prabhupada said, we just read Krishna book. So they got Krishna book and they read for 6 hours straight. Prabhupada would read, then he would give the book to someone else. You read a chapter, and then they give the book back to Prabhupada. And that's all they did. Just hearing and chanting about Krishna. And if you absorb yourself in that, you will get nam ruchi. You will get taste for chanting. That is the process. So if we're lacking a taste in devotional service, if we're not feeling renounced, because you will feel you'll feel detached from the material energy if you absorb yourself more in hearing and chanting. So take advantage of these days, like Ekadashi, like Janmashtami, they're coming up, and absorb yourself, and the taste will come. Devotees should feel ecstatic all the time. That's how we should feel. And if we don't feel ecstatic all the time, there's a problem with us. It means we don't apply ourselves properly to the program. That's all it is. Because there's nothing wrong with Krishna. Do you ever see Krishna? He's not ecstatic. Janmashtami morning, the curtain's open. There's 800 of us in here in the temple room. And you don't see Krishna with a sad look on his face. He's ecstatic. Have you seen what he eats before the curtain's open? Janmashtami morning, he eats like sandesh cake and like all these milk sweets. And then by the time, he's just got a big smile. The curtain open, he's just sitting there looking like, he's in ecstasy. He's just looking at all us, so what's next? he's a boy, right? He's a 15-year-old boy, it's his birthday, and he's just looking at all of us, and we're all there. We've come to see him, and he said, so what's next? What are you going to give me? How are you going to dress me? What new clothes are you going to offer me? What are you going to cook for me today? How are you going to decorate my mandir? All this. So Krishna is just there, and it's all for our benefit. So Krishna hasn't got a problem. Krishna is ecstatic. And Prabhupada says, if you associate with Krishna, you will also be ecstatic, perpetually, constantly. Is that what you want? Well, then associate with Krishna. It's not difficult. Prabhupada was always ecstatic, always. Even when he appeared, he may not be, but he was always ecstatic. You know, 1970, when they had that first Janmashtami, they stayed up all night. In Japan, they stayed up all night. Then the next day was Vyasa Puja. And they hadn't done Vyasa Puja before. Tomoko Krishna was never done with Prabhupada there. And it was like, you know, some of the very first Vyasa Puja. So they had to say, you know, they didn't know what to do. And then, you know, Prabhupada was sitting there. Now you have to worship the Guru. He was teaching us. So, you know, they're trying to worship. And Prabhupada was upset because they didn't know what they were doing. They were making mistakes. And at one point, Prabhupada was a little annoyed. He said, "Where is Pushpa?" Pushpa means flowers. You know, he's supposed to offer flowers to, like, see, Prabhupada's got flowers all around his feet. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you know, he thought that meant Pushpa rice. You know, it's a, you know, like an opulent rice. We call it Pushpana. So he ran to the kitchen and he said, "Immediately, cook Pushpana rice." And he ran back and he looked at Prabhupada. And Prabhupada just, oh. So this was the way the movement started. Making mistakes. But then Prabhupada trained us. Prabhupada was tolerant in the beginning because he was training us. But now we should know. We should know what Krishna wants. Because Prabhupada has taught us, the Guru has taught us. We know what Krishna wants. So we should give Krishna what he wants. Right? The standards should be as Krishna likes. And Krishna is very particular. He is a connoisseur. Connoisseur means someone who is very particular about fine things. So Krishna is very particular. If you read the Bhagavatam, he's very particular. He likes things in a particular way. So Janmashtami means we offer everything to Krishna as he wants it. And if we do that, we will be ecstatic because Krishna is ecstatic. And if you worship him properly, that will be the natural byproduct. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments on what we discussed. What are the chances? You feel like it's hard to overcome the anattas. You feel like, what are the chances of us getting to nishta? Zero. No, it's not really like that. We feel like that. Sometimes we feel like you're crossing an ocean of anattas or like that. But actually, Prabhupada described one time, nishta means when the anattas are about 70% destroyed. That's nishtita. Nishta bhakti, what we call nishta, which is the fifth level of bhakti. What we call nishta, it doesn't mean there are no anattas there. It just means the anattas have minimalized. And because they're minimal, then you don't feel the effects of them so much. And they don't distract you in devotional service. The reason we're anishtita, which means unsteady in devotional service, is because the anattas continuously distract us. Anatta means an unwanted thing. So your material desires, they distract us, and then it's difficult for us to focus on Krishna. But when it gets down to about 70%, then Prabhupada said that is nishta. So not the anattas are fully gone, but they're not distracting you as much anymore. And as a devotee, as you practice longer, you realize not to take the material desires so seriously, or not to take the mind so seriously. The mind just comes up with the same stuff all the time. And as you practice devotional service, you kind of get used to it. You just, like, the mind just says it, and you just go, "Oh yeah, okay, that's what you said 20 years ago, so," and you just keep doing your service. So you don't get so distracted by it. I remember when I was a new devotee, when we were Sankirtan devotees, we used to go out, and I used to park the car every day, and then we'd go out and distribute books. So I drive out away from the temple, get to the car park, and then as soon as I turn off the ignition, my mind would say to me every day, take rest. Go to sleep. Don't go out and distribute books. You know, you're tired, you know, you're pushing yourself, all these excuses. So I just sit there for a minute, listen to my mind, all the excuses, and I just say, okay, you finished now? And he goes, yeah. He'd say, yeah, that's about it. And I'd say, okay. And then I'd just get out the car and go and distribute books. You just have to learn how to deal with it, that's all. Because it's just the anattas are always there. Even Tamal Krishnamurti is my guru, Maharaj. We were on a plane with him one time. I think we were flying from Sydney to Melbourne or Brisbane to Sydney or somewhere. And he was sitting with one of my godbrothers, who was a brahmachari at the time. And he was encouraging him to be strong in his brahmachari ashram. And Tamal Krishnamurti said, he said that it's not that sex desire does not affect the sannyasis, but they tolerate it. That's the point. So that's called nishta. Nishta means fixed. Everyone gets sex desire, that comes. I mean, until you get to the level of paramahamsa like Prabhupada, then you don't get affected by these things. But for everyone, these material desires are there. As long as you have a body and a mind, and you relate to that and you identify with that, you will experience these things. But then you get to a point where you just tolerate it or you just don't take it seriously. You say, okay, it's there. It's always been there. It's just, and it becomes less. The more you absorb yourself in devotional service, it purifies you. And then gradually, that's why you have to throw yourself into devotional service. Rupa Goswami actually says, the way to become purified is to perform intense devotional service. He specifically says that. The devotional service, it has to be intense. If it's not intense, you don't get purified. And that's the beauty about this particular part of ISKCON, the Melbourne Temple. I've been related to the Melbourne Temple for many years. It's more intense than other places because there's a bigger momentum going on here. So it's not for the faint-hearted, because it's intense. There's a lot to do. And we don't have enough devotees to do everything we do or want to do. So therefore, it means that we have to become intense. But it purifies us. And I'd rather be somewhere where it's intense, where I'm close to the fire or in the fire, than standing back, because then you don't really get purified. So just absorb yourself. And as you get older, things drop off anyway. The mind and body ease up a little bit in one way. In another way, they cause more problems. So the material world is basically a set of problems. You're just having to navigate yourself through. Is that okay? Any other questions?
Yes. We read in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam also that we cannot obtain Krishna by austerity, tapasya, or charity, and we can only attain him through pure devotional service. But we see in the history in Satyayuga, like this, rishis are doing only tapasya, like Kadamba, and even Devaki and Vasudeva in the previous life, they did only tapasya. So how do we understand that they attain Krishna as their son by just tapasya? Where is its contradiction?
No, it's not, because it's bhakti, it's not tapasya, because they couldn't have attained Krishna by, if it was only tapasya, they could not have attained Krishna. Rishabhdev says, tapo divyam. Tapasya is there, like in being in ISKCON's tapasya, right? It is. No, I mean, whether you're a full-time devotee like some of us are, or whether you're a congregational member, it's tapasya, because you have to do austerity for Krishna's pleasure. Right? You can't avoid that in devotional service.
They were not chanting or doing...
You don't know what they were doing. Of course they were chanting. They don't just sit there doing nothing. They're just sitting there. No, they're chanting. It says Dhruva Maharaj, right? So if you go back to Canto 4... Right, so it said he did austerity. So he stood on one leg, right? And then he stopped breathing. So he started eating leaves. He said, oh no, that's not austere enough, so I'll just breathe. That was austere. None of us could even imagine that kind of austerity. But it says, all the way through, it says he worshipped the deities. It says he was worshipping deities every day. It said he was chanting mantras, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So take it that Kardama was doing the same thing, and take it that Prishni and Sutapa were doing the same thing. Otherwise, how did they attain Krishna? Just because it says they're only doing austerity doesn't mean that's all they were doing. Because unless there's bhakti, right? And we're doing austerity as well. You know, sometimes like I'm asked to do something I don't really want to do in devotional service. Okay, I've got to do it. Right? And that's austerity. It means voluntarily accepting something you don't want to do for Krishna's pleasure or Guru's pleasure or the devotee's pleasure. Right? So that is austerity, that's tapasya. But when you take that up for Krishna, that becomes purifying. Tapo divyam. So austerity is part of devotional service, but when it's connected to Krishna, it's part of devotional service. Vairagya or renunciation for itself, but if it's renunciation for Krishna, that's devotional service. Jnana, knowledge in and of itself, but if it's for Krishna, if you're studying, like we study all day, not all day, but we study every day. We're studying right now. This is what we're doing. We're reading books and we're talking about books. This is philosophy. Why are we doing that? It's to get to Krishna. So it's divya jnana. Or tapo divyam. It's transcendental, it's not material. Is that okay?
Because the demons also did tapasya like Hiranyakashipu did. So I was thinking, you know, what is the difference of demons doing tapasya and devotees doing tapasya?
Because was Hiranyakashipu, was he chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya? No. That's the difference. Dhruva Maharaj, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, that's the difference. One's chanting the Lord's name, the other one wants to kill the Lord. That's the difference. Right? So one's doing material austerity, one's doing spiritual austerity. That's the difference. How did Hiranyakashipu have Prahlad Maharaj as his kid? How is it possible that the demon has a devotee kid? How is that possible? Because he's doing austerity, and Narada, and I think Parvat Muni, they took the form of birds, and they came up on the branch just above where he's doing the austerity. He was fixed in austerity, and they kept saying, Narayan, Narayana, Narayana, chirping like little birds, Narayana, in his head. So then he hears the sound and he thinks, that's my enemy. He tells the birds, go away. And then he goes back into his austerity and they come back again, Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. And he's infuriated. He tells them to go away. And then he goes back, but now his mind's so disturbed he can't get back into his austerity. So he goes back to his palace, sleeps with his wife. Right, but then the whole time that he's having intercourse with his wife, he's thinking, Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. Right? And then he gives birth to Prahlad Maharaj. Right? So that's how a demon becomes purified. But devotional service must be anukul. Anukul means favorable, not pratikul. Okay, he's doing devotional service, same as Kamsa, same as... They're doing devotional service, thinking about Krishna all the time, but not in a good way. That's the difference. Okay? Any other question? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki?